By the way, have you been introduced to Don Stevens, Larry?
No.
Oh, Larry.
He's Larry Pastor. Yeah.
Good to meet you. Did you just get here?
No, I've been here a week. For record. Marriage?
Yes.
Actually, I find I'm staying 11 days, not 10 days.
It is terrific. Yeah.
The new book is wonderful.
Oh, the little one? Oh, you got a copy?
Yeah.
Where'd you pick that up?
In Los Angeles at the Sahabas that they have.
Also, Michelin got some out there.
Yeah. Oh, I read it.
I'm delighted.
Which book is that?
Listen to the New Humanity.
Good. You read it in Spanish or Italian?
English.
That was cheeky. That was cheeky.
I'm trying to untangle that. I need your services to help.
You think that Calvin is trying to untangle it?
What do you mean? Craig's more nimble than I am, Virginia. So you see, it really helps when he's in on the same conversation.
Larry, what if you read that in English? Just listen to humanity. Listen to the new humanity. What was interesting about it?
What was interesting about it?
Mm.
I don't know. I all the stuff that I read that you do, I appreciate how you clarified the whole not worrying process. You know, don't worry, be happy. Just seeing the slogan, don't worry, be happy. Mm. Oh, that's cute. You know, but what's helped me and what you've written is really applying that.
Well, really seeing that is such a basic thing. It's a handle to so much deeper spirituality. You know, it's kind of like it bridges that gap. It really enforces the fact that that's one of the key things to really having the kind of mind.
For real.
For real, yes. And kind of approach. Yeah, exactly. So I enjoyed that about it very much. Of course, you did that in the other book also, but this, in the latest book, that was even more clearer and more, I appreciate it.
Increasing old age, you uh-huh. see, clarifies uh-huh. many things.
Because that, you know, it seems to me that always breaks down, that's the basic thing in life we have to do is not worry, but be happy. That's like ultimate trust in God. Mm-hmm.
By the way, have you heard how Larry happened to be here?
No, I haven't.
Lisa, have you heard
of this? Okay. Oh, this story is fantastic.
Peter, have you heard him?
No.
I haven't heard either.
You know what?
Have you heard him from Australia? From
I think I'm going to go have a nice cup of tea.
You're all dying to hear his story.
You haven't heard?
No.
I think you're front and center.
It's really... You know what I did was, I was in communion with him on Saturday, on Silence Day.
Uh-huh.
Listening to it.
Telepathic?
That was recorded at the time when he divulged to us the secret.
When Larry did.
Yeah. It was so beautiful. Mm. We were deeply moved. Mm. We were touched. Yeah.
Do we get the story?
Well, we'd like to hear.
Later.
You haven't been deeply moved or touched.
No, but have you all got your tissues with you?
Yeah.
Let us have a box of tissues.
I have a clean handkerchief this morning.
Take a catheter.
Come on, Larry. Let us. Yes.
Come on, Larry.
All right.
No, really, it's so good. Let others who are not here. Where is Tessa? Is she? Where? Oh, yeah, here. You're here for the first time. Mm-hmm. Do you know him?
Larry.
Huh? Have you heard of him?
No. Oh. Yeah, I call other people, I said.
If they want to. Yeah, they... No, it's true. See the ways of Baba. Just hear it, Don. Really, are you listening, Don?
I'm here.
Yeah, good. Yeah, come on, Larry.
Where do I begin? It's hard to begin, but I will.
No, but from the very beginning.
From the very beginning.
Yeah, when what you all were doing and how you were and what happened. And it's so true and so beautiful also when it is revealed. It's a story for every heart and of every heart.
Well, it all began a long time ago when I was born.
Good. When you were not born or born?
When I was born.
Oh, I see.
Which gets longer and longer ago by the day. I was born in Buffalo, New York, which is a terrible place to be born, really.
That's all right.
We already have sympathy for you.
Yes, thank you. I try to pull on the strings of sympathy early in the story.
The snow is pretty deep there.
Yes, very deep.
Did they beat you also?
No, my parents were good parents. All right. But the snow was deep. In fact, most of my childhood I walked backwards to school in the wind and snow and over drifts. And it's really terrible. Actually, you feel sorry for me now, yes. I see tears. Anyway, I was raised in a Catholic family. A very Catholic family. And of course this is Catholicism in the 50s, which is a unique brand of Catholicism. It changed in the 60s after the Second Vatican Council. But Catholicism in the 50s was very, it's nostalgic now when you think about it. Nuns, real nuns, lots of nuns. Catholic grammar school, which I took part in for 8 years of my grammar school. When I think back, you know, now since I know Baba and have this relationship with him, I often wonder why I was born in a Catholic family in the 1950s and why I was a Catholic as the church changed and became what it is today. Anyway, it was a very important part of my life, and when I was growing up, I took things very seriously when it came to spirituality. I took things very seriously. I was precociously just very serious about things, and so I remember being in the second grade, and it was time to make my first Holy Communion. Has anybody ever been a Catholic? Makes me feel better if I know what people are talking about. Yeah. But it's at age 7 that they do that, which is the age of reason. They figure you can know who Jesus is, you can make your first communion, which is, you know, you become like a spiritual...
conduit.
You're accountable at that age. And so in that instruction by the nun about who Jesus was, etc., I took it all very seriously. And I remember on May 18th, 1958, which was my first communion day, I remember the date because something very spectacular happened to me. It got to that part in the Mass when we were supposed to finally walk up forward to the communion rail and receive the bread, which was supposed to be the body of Jesus. That's what we were taught. And we were taught it was literally the body of Jesus. You know, the nun explained that when you received this bread and swallowed it, that Jesus would come and live within you for the first time. Of course, I took her at her word. This was a very dramatic event. And I remember walking forward to that rail, that railing, to receive communion. And as soon as the priest put that piece of bread on my tongue and I swallowed it, I was filled with such beautiful bliss. And it was the first time I had ever tasted, you know, such divine bliss just flowing into my life. And I went back to my pew and I just began weeping during the rest of the Mass. I was just so filled with bliss. My parents had a big party that day and invited all the relatives for dinner and dancing, etc. And I remember even in the midst of the party, I snuck away into the attic just to sit in front of a picture of Jesus because I was just experiencing such beautiful bliss, such his presence in my life. And so I had from a very early age, I had a very unique connection with Jesus. I don't know, probably passed down from another lifetime or something. Who knows? All these things are not important anyway. But there was a unique connection with Jesus. When I was growing up, I would continually, at different times, be filled with the same kind of bliss. In Buffalo, New York, there are Catholic churches practically in every corner. In fact, I think there are more Catholic churches than gas stations. And as a child, I used to wander into these churches and look at these pictures of saints and angels and wonderful, dramatic pictures of heaven and hell. I determined right away where I wanted to go. I just see these people swimming in flames. It's not too hard to decide what you want to do. And again, as a child, you know, I would walk into these churches and I would just be, right away I would just begin sensing Jesus' presence so full. Sometimes, to be honest with you, as a child of like 10 or 12, I would pace the aisles. I'd be alone in the church. I would pace the aisles in the church for an hour, just so beautifully filled with Jesus' presence. And that was a gift to me when I was growing up. And I began to become very eccentric, of course, having these experiences. I used to have statues in my room, you know, things like that, candles, incense. I was really into all that. But as I grew older, my relationship with Jesus continued, and of course the church changed, which I really got into, the church becoming modernized, you know, guitar masses. We had the underground Catholic church in those days, which meant we just, you know, we didn't meet in the church, but we met in someone's home, and the priest didn't wear vestments. We just gathered around the kitchen table, and this was very liberal, and, you know, that type of thing. When I got tired of that phase, I really began sensing that somehow I had lost the Jesus of my earlier years. I knew there was power to be experienced, and there was bliss, there was peace, and somehow liberal Catholicism and all these new ways of doing things didn't satisfy me. So I began searching again for an even deeper experience with Jesus, and finally I was at the university, Arizona State University in Tempe, Arizona. And I walked into the Catholic Student Center there, and I saw someone sitting in a chair or laying in a chair, I forget which it was, I think he was laying down. And he had like tears in his eyes, and he had this rapturous expression on his face, and there were some people around him, and I knew I had walked into something that, you know, was a little bit unusual. And I said to someone, what's happened here? And he said, well, he was just filled with the Holy Spirit. And I said, really, what's that? And he says, well, here's a pamphlet for you to read. It'll explain all about it. And so I ran across my first Catholic Charismatics, is what they were called. These were a group of people that were emphasizing that not only did you need to know Jesus as Lord in your life, but you needed to be filled with the Holy Spirit. That there was another experience of, not only did you know Jesus, but there was another experience where Jesus himself filled you with his Holy Spirit, where you became filled with peace and joy and love and understanding and all of the various gifts that the Holy Spirit had for you. Well, that seemed very interesting to me. The pamphlet also said that if you had this experience, sometimes you began speaking in an unknown language called, you know, speaking in tongues and glossolalia. This all happened in the in the 1960s, late 1960s, early 1970s, it was called the Catholic Charismatic Movement. And what actually happened was, it not only happened among Catholics, it happened among a lot of denominations. People began becoming Pentecostal. You know, some of the traditional churches began having some of these Pentecostal type experiences. And so, all of this intrigued me, so I remember after reading that little book, I was staying in an apartment at that time, and I went to the pool outside, and I sat by the pool. And I prayed, and I said, if this is really so, if I can be filled with the Spirit, if I can be filled with such bliss and peace and power, I said, I just prayed to God and asked him if he would do that for me. And again, and I was just filled again. In an ever-increasing way, you know, just, and I began speaking in tongues and just worshiping and praising God. I tell you all these experiences just to, you know, let you know that there was this connection with Jesus in my life. I don't know why it was there, but you know, I just began loving him all the more. I was so into being a charismatic Catholic that eventually I found out I didn't even need to be a Catholic. And so it helped me exit the Catholic Church. As a matter of fact, there were, in the 1960s and 1970s, 3 million Catholics internationally became charismatic, had this experience. And statistically, they say that as a result of it, 2 million of them finally left the Catholic Church and became like non-denominational type people. They didn't care what church they went to. It didn't matter anymore. As long as they were Christian, they didn't care what they called themselves. So I was in that category very quickly. And I began hanging around a lot of non-denominational people. We prided ourselves on the fact that it didn't matter what Christian church you went to, as long as you were Christian, that was the important thing. As long as you were experiencing Jesus in a real way. So I went to seminary. After finishing my BA, I ended up in seminary, a non-denominational charismatic seminary in California, where I started working on my master's in divinity. And that training was very interesting. And of course, the big thing that we pushed was, you need to be filled with the Holy Spirit. If you know Jesus, you have to experience the Holy Spirit. That's what he wants for you. And I have to admit, I have experienced a lot of unusual things preaching and teaching that to people. We would have I've been in rooms of 300 people that knew nothing about the Holy Spirit. And all I had to do was just pray that Jesus would fill them and just wave my hand over them. And within a matter of minutes, everyone would be worshiping God in an unknown language. Some people would have fallen unconscious on the floor. Other people were crying. You know, it was just, I've seen wild things, you know, just realizing that God is there and he's powerful and he loves you. After I graduated from school, I went into full-time ministry and began teaching on the seminary level, college level, and began doing a little bit of traveling around the country, teaching at various seminars. I also noticed that as I began speaking sometimes, that people would experience physical healings while I would be speaking. And so I was in full-time ministry. I did some television. I had a daily radio program for a while. But mostly a lot of teaching. And finally, as years passed by, the thing I was involved with, the charismatic movement, began to get very commercialized. When I was involved with it, it was very fresh and a very beautiful thing. People were really, really experiencing God in a new way. But it began to be very commercialized. In fact, in the United States today, it's like, it's big business. It's television, and it's a lot of rich people, and a lot of people making a lot of money. And I sensed difficulty in the ministry, surrounded by people that were obviously in it just for the money. And I was going through a few other crises in my life at the time. And I eventually began searching again in my life, wondering where I really fit in Christianity. The school I was teaching at began to have financial problems, which I didn't understand at the time, but now it was really a blessing in disguise, because my courses that I was teaching were cut back until finally I was forced to get additional income, and I began to get involved in the travel business, which I am into full-time today. And lots of things happen. But finally, I was in the place in my life where I really didn't know where I fit in as far as my Christianity was concerned. I knew that Jesus was real. I'd experienced his presence. In fact, you know, to be honest with you, not to sound egocentric, I almost became like an expert on the presence of God. Does that make sense to you? Yeah. I knew what God felt like. I knew what it meant to experience his bliss and his power. And yet, I started going to different churches and things after I finally left the ministry. And I just couldn't sense him anymore. I just couldn't feel that. I just couldn't hook up with anything. I went to the Episcopal Church, I went to the Catholic Church, I went to this church, I went to that church, and it was just kind of like nothing connected anymore. And I really began to be very confused, because I had always considered myself to be very close to Jesus and very blessed by him, and yet it wasn't there anymore. And to be honest with you, I began to get very depressed. You know, it was just like, there's nothing there. It's gone. It's left me. It's lifted. Something that was there for years and I could always depend upon is just lifted and it's just gone. While I was living in San Francisco, and I, to be honest with you, I was really depressed with all of life, because my life has always been a life connected with God and a sense of spirituality. And finally, I met a friend, and he seemed to have a sense of joy about him that I really, you know, when I found someone with what seemed to be authentic joy, I was just trying to get as much as I possibly could from him. And this friend of mine's name is Wayne. His name is Wayne Myers. And we had never discussed anything spiritual. In fact, he didn't know, you know, what a wreck I was, because I couldn't connect with anything anymore. And he invited me to his house one day, and I noticed on the wall, I just looked at this picture, and it was a picture of this guy with a mustache, and I could tell it was somebody from the East. You know, it looked like some kind of guru or something. And yet Wayne had never mentioned to me that he was into any Eastern religion or anything, and so it intrigued me, and I asked him who this was. And he says, well, that's Meher Baba. And I said, oh. I didn't say any more, and I said, you know, that's interesting. But I would keep visiting him, and he's a travel agent also, and he had lots of slides of India and stuff, and he would show me slides. And eventually there were slides slipped in of this place.
He was working you
out. And, you know, I didn't pay any attention to it. Because I've never been into Eastern religions. I mean, I was a Christian. You weren't supposed to be involved in Eastern. In fact, I was kind of on the verge of being a fundamentalist. You know, there's only one way to God, and that's Jesus. Right, Erich?
Yeah, quite right.
And so finally, one day I called, it was a Friday, and if I don't have anything to do on a Friday, it's not the case anymore, but the Friday night was very important to me, after working hard all week, and if I don't have plans for a Friday night, the whole weekend is destroyed, you know, socially to me. So I called him up and I said, and we usually had dinner on Friday nights after work, and I called him up and I said, do you want to have dinner tonight? And he says, well, I can't. And I says, oh, that's a shame. He says, I says, why? You know, this is the first Friday in a long time you're not able to. And he says, well, I have to go to a birthday party. I says, oh. I says, well, whose birthday is it? And he kind of was a little bit hesitant. And he says, well, it's Meher Baba's birthday. And I says, Meher Baba's birthday? I says, I thought he was dead. And he says, well, we still celebrate his birthday. And I says, oh. And then he kind of hesitated. I could tell there was some hesitance. And then he said, you know, if you wanted to, you could go along. And I thought, wow. I was so desperate for something to do on this Friday night. But I says, well, okay, I'll go. So I went with him. I met him. We took a bus. And we went to this birthday party. Now, I don't know what I was expecting when I walked in. I knew that these people had something to do with Eastern religions. And in San Francisco, the Hare Krishna are always walking by, beating drums and cymbals and things. They have a restaurant near where I live. And I was expecting some kind of vegetarian feast with these people in orange robes, you know, consecrating the food to the gods, etc. I was expecting some weirdness. So I walked in. And I was totally floored because, you know, nobody had orange robes on.
and they seemed like pretty normal people. Although it turned out that they weren't really. Because, you know, they had this huge pink birthday cake that said, "Happy birthday, beloved Baba." And then they had his picture on the wall. And, you know, they had a lot of food and they had cake. And then this little orchestra came out and started playing all these Cole Porter tunes. And they got up and started dancing, you know. And then they started playing Begin the Begin. And someone that evidently knew I was new, leaned over and said, "This was Baba's favorite song." And I thought, "Oh, this is bizarre." This is really bizarre. And I kept thinking, how can this be spiritual? I don't understand it. How can this be spiritual?
Was it the Palace of Fine Arts?
No, this was the one before that. This was the... it was in Albany at some Masonic hall. And, you know, another thing, too, which was really coincidental, was there was somebody that I had met at one of the Catholic churches I was going to. There was somebody I met at the Catholic church that I thought was a little bit weird to begin with. And I bumped into him at this same party. He was a Baba lover. And... So there was this party that went on, and finally, to make matters worse, they were going to have a movie. And it turned out to be a silent movie, you know, of Baba. And everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats, you know, just watching this movie. And I kept looking at these people, and I kept thinking, who do they think this is? You know, this is very, very strange. This is a very strange group of people. So I kind of forgot about it, you know, and moved on in life. And then a few months later... In fact, it was probably almost a year later. My friend Wayne and I both got free tickets on Pan Am anywhere in the world. And because we're both travel agents, it was like this little bit, you know, they're always having these little gimmicks and promotions, etc. And so we got free tickets anywhere in the world, and I took Pan Am's map out and tried to figure out where's the farthest place I could go on this ticket, get the most out of it. I'm not going to waste it on New York or something. And I looked and it was India. India was the farthest place you could go. And Wayne, who had been to India many times, you know, I called him up and I said, "Did you get your free ticket?" He said, "Yes." I says, "Where are you going to go?" He says, "Well, I think I'll go to India." "Really?" I said, I was thinking that's where I'd go too. And he says, "Well, why don't you come with me?" And I said, "Fine." I said, "You know, I want to see the Taj Mahal." And I kept, you know, came up. We sat down and planned the thing. We were going to go to Delhi. We're flying into Delhi. We had to fly into Delhi on this ticket anyway for some reason. I don't know why. But it had to be Delhi. And we were going to go to Agra to the Taj Mahal and then Jaipur and Udaipur. And then Wayne says, "Oh, we have to go down to Aurangabad to the Ellora Caves." And then finally in all of the planning, we were going to a place, he said, called Mehrabad. And I said, "What's that?" And he says, "Well..." And he hesitated a little bit. And I says, "Well, I don't know, you know. I don't know if I want to go to a place like that." And he says, "Well, you know," he says, "if I'm going to..." He says, "To be level with you and to be honest, if I'm going to go to India, this is where I'm going to end up. And if you want to go, you can either end up there or you can continue traveling and do other things." He said, "But it's nothing to be afraid of, you know, it's kind of a carefree place, you know, it's not heavy, it's like that party you went to." Nobody's, because, you know, he could see my hesitation. And to be honest with you, I was not to have anything to do with Eastern religion. I'm born again. I'm a born-again Christian. There's only one way to the Father, and that's Jesus Christ, you know. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me." I had all my scriptures down. I was all, you know, no way was I going to get involved in Eastern religions. In fact, to be honest with you, in the past as a minister, I've prayed over people who have been involved in Eastern religions and cast the devil out of them. So that was my attitude towards Eastern religions, you know. And, but I was so desperate spiritually. I have to be honest with you there. I was really getting desperate spiritually. So Wayne kind of, you know, in his little Wei said, you know, if you're going to spend, this is after I decided to come to Mirabad, he says, you know, if you're going to, oh, he started showing me pictures of the place, he said, to make me feel more comfortable about it. And he says, if you're going to, you know, if you're going to be here, maybe you should read something. So I decided I would read something, and he suggested that I get the book, The Avatar. Well, I never got all the way through. I got like halfway through it. I never read The Avatar. I read the Ava part, just, you know, half of it. And the only reason I finished half of it is because I closed it and I thought to myself, I have no problem. I can go to this Eastern religion place because I have no problem. This guy is a kook, this Mera Baba. He's an absolute kook. I mean, this is ridiculous. He's changing this, he's moving there, he's moving here, and he thinks he's God. I says, well, there's no problem. No problem at all. I can go. I felt very good about going, as a matter of fact, because no more problems. And then Wayne gave me Kitty Davies' book. It's a huge book. And I just paged through that, looked at some of the pictures, read some of the things. And had no qualms, really. A little bit hesitant. Really, in a way I was. And we traveled all over India, and I was exhausted, and we came to Mirabad. Before we even went to the center, Wayne wanted to buy his return train ticket from, because we had to return to Delhi, he wanted to buy his ticket from Ahmednagar to Delhi, even before we got to the center. We had checked in at the trust office, but even before we got to the pilgrim center, he wanted to buy his ticket. And he says, you might as well buy yours now. Because it's like, I was going to stay here a couple weeks. And I said, no, I'm going to wait. Because I thought, I don't like this place. I'm going to be gone out of here in 3 days. So we checked in at the Pilgrim Center. And Wayne took me on a tour of the place. And I, you know, it was all right, but I thought it was a little bit strange. We went up to the tomb. You know, I thought, well, this is it. This is supposed to be the Holy of Holies. I didn't experience anything in there. I kept wondering, you know, why am I here? This is such a crazy place to be. And I decided, after a few hours there, that maybe I should read something. There's nothing else to do here except play volleyball, which I don't do. So maybe I should read something. So I went in the library, and there were so many books in there, I thought, well, I don't know what to read. So I pulled out a book, and I don't know if it was The Everything and the Nothing or The Nothing and the Everything. I still get those titles mixed up. It was the skinny one.
Everything and Nothing.
Everything and the Nothing. And I opened it up, and I looked at the page, and on this page, the first line I read said, I have brought you here for many miles to spend time with me. Brought you here for many miles to spend time with me. I'm forgetting one thing. I have to go back in time, and you have to forgive me for forgetting this, but this is important to understanding what happened to me. Before I came to India, I was at my parents' house, and I had a dream. And in this dream, there were a lot of people around, and there was this house. Somebody said to me, come inside the house, I'm going to show you something. And I went inside this house, and I walked around, and there in the corner of this room was this like formless being. And I started talking to this person. And then all of a sudden it occurred to me that this person knew everything about me. And then I was so amazed at this, that they knew all about my childhood, they knew everything about me. All of a sudden I looked at this person and I thought, you know who this is that you're talking to? This is God you're talking to. And right away in the dream, I knelt down and I started crying. And I woke up in my bed and sat right up, and I had tears in my eyes, and I had been crying out loud in the middle of the night. And I was so filled with God's bliss for the first time in a few years after leaving the ministry. And I thought, what is this? I'm having a spiritual experience. I don't understand this. And I knew I was coming here, and I thought, wouldn't it be something if that had something to do with coming here? But I thought, no, that's crazy. Don't even think like that. Okay, anyway, we're back here. And we're at the Pilgrim Center, and I go into the tomb a few times because there's really a lack of things to do. And I really appreciate the smell of incense, and that's where it wafts through the room if you're going to experience incense. And I'm sitting there, and I keep thinking to myself, I can't believe it that these people think that this Meher Baba is God. How could this be? This just does not make sense with my, you know, theology. It's really a shame that these people are so deceived, you know. I have an education. I have a master's in divinity. It's such a shame that these people are so, you know, don't know anything. And I'm sitting in there, and all of a sudden I start sensing something. I start sensing, like, the presence of the Holy Spirit in there, the presence of Jesus, just a little bit. And I thought, this is, you know, forget that, this is crazy. Anyway, going to dinner and stuff like that, finally I become very antsy staying at the Pilgrim Center. I don't fit in. None of this is making sense. I feel like the black sheep over there. And I decide I'm going to get out of here soon. Well, I says, I'll stay one more day. And the next day was Baba's birthday celebration, of all days, to get up at 5 o'clock and be at the tomb, because, of course, you have to be born early in the morning. And then the women were coming to the tomb, and then they had refreshments, etc., and programs, and we went back down to the Pilgrim Center and ate lunch. But that day, for the first time, we were supposed to come to Marazan, where I had been instructed that this is where Baba lived and that this is where his close Mandali lived. And so we took the bus here, and everyone is singing on the bus all these Baba songs. You know, it's Baba's birthday. They're really in a good mood, and they're singing songs to Baba. And I thought to myself, I just don't fit in this at all. And I thought to myself, well, make the most out of it. People are singing songs to Baba. So I started in my heart, I started praising Jesus on the bus all the way from the Pilgrim Center. People were singing, oh, Baba, we love you. And I kept in my heart saying, oh, Jesus, I love you. Started directing everything to Jesus. I thought, well, might as well make the most out of this. Be spiritual also. You know, direct it to Jesus. Direct it to something that you can connect with. And we got here and we got off the bus, and my friend Wayne said, he says, come with me, I'm going to show you something. I says, where are we going? He says, I'm going to show you Baba's room. I says, why not? I've seen everything else. I've seen Baba's sandals. I've seen the table house. I've seen Baba's chapati hut or whatever it's called. I've seen this. I might as well see his room, too, get the full tour. So we walk back here. And I opened the door of the room and walked in, and all I can say is it was like walking into heaven itself. It was just like, it was like heaven in there. It was like entering into a totally different dimension. And I think Wayne noticed it because he left immediately. He just left. He left me in this room all by myself. And I was so filled with the power of God in that room. And I didn't know what to do. I thought, this is really crazy. I'm not supposed to be experiencing this. This doesn't make sense. You don't experience this. This doesn't fit. You know, this doesn't, this is, you're supposed to be, Jesus is the only way, etc. And so I began walking around, looking around the room, looking at all these pictures of Baba, which I didn't connect with at all. And finally, in the corner there, was this picture of Jesus. And he was reaching to Peter that was sinking in the waves. And I looked at this picture of Jesus and I thought, oh, this is great. They've got a picture of Jesus in here. And I was experiencing this bliss, and this power, and this presence. And I just looked at this picture and I said, oh, Jesus, you know how much I love you. Thank you for filling me with your presence and your power. I'm just so... this is just so beautiful. Thank you for blessing me in this way. It's so good to have you so... to experience you like I did years ago again. And, you know, I'm just really entering into Jesus and just talking to him and communicating with him. And then all of a sudden, I started feeling Jesus communicating with me. And he just, you know, he told me, like he had many times in the past, he said, I just want you to know how much I love you. I want you to know how much I'm concerned about you. I just love you. And all this love started coming from Jesus. I just experienced this coming towards me. And it wasn't a loud voice, and it wasn't really an audible voice, but it was like the next channel down, you know what I mean? It was like the next frequency down. But it was deep in my spirit, but it was very clear and very real to me. Jesus said to me, he says, I love you so much, I've always loved you. And that's why I want you to understand something. I thought, what's that? And he says, I want you to understand something. He said, I and Meher Baba, we're one and the same person. And right then there was this like, I don't know what it was. It was like something that entered me. And it was like a switch that was turned in me. And at that instant, all of my theology, all my past ideas, all my religious upgrading, it went down a drain somewhere. It was just drained out of me. And I went and sat down and I just wept and wept and wept. And then finally when I came to, I started feeling more love coming towards me. Only this time it wasn't coming from Jesus. It was coming from Baba's bed. All this love was coming towards me, and it was coming from Meher Baba. And then, it wasn't an audible voice again, it was the next step. Baba said to me, he said, I love you so much. I'm so concerned about you. I've had this all planned for you. He said, before you left the States, you had a dream. Someone took you into a room, and you went in the corner of that room, and you met God face to face. That was me that you met face to face. That was me that you experienced. So again, I started crying. So that was on Baba's birthday last year, 1984, that that happened. And I went home, and my life hasn't been the same since. I have no problems with theology, it's gone. I don't know where it went. It went down some drain somewhere. I don't sit around trying to figure out why this is this. I've had an experience in my life where I know definitely that Meher Baba is God. And not only is he God, he's my best friend. He's my closest companion. And it's just changed my life. Things that were important in my life are no longer important. And every day, I firmly believe, there's lots of things I learned in my Christian training, I firmly believe that everything is grace, it's Baba's grace, and it's his love. But I really believe that we have to be open to his grace. And so I've tried to personally be disciplined in my relationship with Baba. There's one thing that I do, and it's in the morning. I always used to get up like 15 minutes before I had to be out the door, you know, for work. But ever since coming to India that first time, I've been getting up like 3 hours earlier. And I've been disciplined, even though I don't feel like it. I have a picture of Baba in my room, and I spend time with him every morning. I've discovered that it's so very important to spend the first few hours of my day with him, and to say the Master's Prayer, and just to be with him. And he continually blesses me with his presence. I don't know why. You know, a lot of people don't, it's not really necessary to experience the presence of God. Who cares anyway? It's not important. But for some reason, he's blessed me like that. And it's this continual give and take of love. And it's really changed my life. That's my story.
No, that's not your story. That's whole story.
That's Baba's story.
It's Baba's story, no doubt. It's your story, but it's a part of the story. We want you to be also
narrating to us your encounter with your cousin.
Ah.
Which is the best part of the whole story. Baba does his things, you see, that's a different thing. Now, that is common to us all, but then there is something which is uncommon, you know. What happened, you have to go back to in the past.
You know, when I was here...
Yeah, bring that out. That is very...
And what
your crazy friend...
That's right. You know, it occurred to me when I was here and had this experience that I had heard the name Meher Baba once before. And then it occurred to me that years ago, I went back east, because I lived in California, I went back east and I bumped into my cousin David in Buffalo. It was somebody's funeral or something. And, of course, I was a born-again Christian and I was discussing that with him. And he says, you know, there's only one thing that has ever made sense to me spiritually, and that's Meher Baba. I thought, well, that's good. I says, whatever works for you. And that was all we had ever said about that. A few months before I came out here, I and Wayne both went to New York together for the weekend. And I had mentioned to David that I was coming to India.
Your cousin.
Cousin David, yeah. Mm. And he didn't say anything about Meher Baba at all, but he found out that I was coming here, and he thought to himself, that's it. This crazy religious fanatic cousin of mine, this is just perfect for him. He's going to go to India, and he's going to get into... He says, he told me afterwards that he just knew it. He just smiled to himself and said, I can't believe this. I don't know how this ever happened. But he had followed Meher Baba for quite a length of time, but then kind of like put him on the shelf and forgot about it and went his merry way doing his own thing in New York City, doing what he needed to do. And he was desperately seeking for something spiritual also. And so when he saw me in New York and saw that I was reading the Avatar, he thought to himself, wouldn't it be something if he thought to himself, if he gets involved in Meher Baba, that's going to be it for me. I'm going to come back to Baba. And because it was just so unbelievable to him, you know, that I, of all people, would be walking around with the book, The Avatar, and going to India. So, while I was here, I thought, well, you know, my cousin David mentioned Meher Baba to me years ago. I've heard this name before. So as soon as I got home, actually it wasn't as soon as I got home, I don't know, I waited a couple weeks. I picked up the phone and I said, Dave, and he says, oh, you're back. And I says, yes. And he says, well? And I says, you'll never believe what happened to me in India. And he says, you know what? I believe it. He says, the same thing happened to me in Myrtle Beach a few years, 10 years ago. And I says, I don't believe it at all. And I says, and you know what, David? I says, this was a couple weeks later. I said, and I got to work, and I had a, Eastern Airlines gave me a free ticket anywhere in the United States, and I says, I'm going to Myrtle Beach. I want to see Myrtle Beach now. And he says, well, if you're going to Myrtle Beach, I'll meet you there. So we both flew to Myrtle Beach together and spent like 5 or 6 days together in Myrtle Beach. That was my cousin David. And we went to Myrtle Beach, and, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's excited about me, etc. But he says it was really irritating being with me in Myrtle Beach because, like, I was on my honeymoon. I'm feeling Baba everywhere, you know, the lagoon cabin, the barn, you know, I'm having a wonderful time. And David said he was just sitting around thinking, I don't feel anything, and, you know, this is, how am I going to get into this again? It was what he was worried about. Anyway, he did go to Baba's bedroom in Myrtle Beach, and Baba really met him there, and, you know, they had a wonderful time together. And so David was all excited again. And he was planning on going to Rio for Christmas last year. And I says, you know what? I says, I'm going to go to India at Christmas time. I says, you ought to forget Rio and come to India with me. And so he did. And so the both of us came last Christmas here and spent Christmas and New Year's. Meanwhile, there was another person that traveled with us, and this was my friend Gary. So after getting back home to San Francisco, this friend of mine, Gary, who was a fundamental, well, he was an evangelical Christian, In fact, he was the choir director at his Baptist church in Detroit. And he's living in San Francisco. And we've become good friends. We met at an evangelical Christian conference about a year before. And there were lots of small group activities. And in this small group, I met him. And after the conference was over, after, you know, talking, it was lots of psychological things. I said to him, you know, I said, I barely know who you are. And this is really weird to tell you this. But you don't, he was living in Los Angeles. I said, you don't belong in Los Angeles at all. I said, that's not your city. I said, you know, I said, you're the type of person that should live in San Francisco. There's so many creative things to do. And, you know, it's a beautiful place. And he wasn't driving at the time either. And I says, anybody that doesn't own a car, I don't know how you can live in Los Angeles. I says, in San Francisco, you don't need a car. And he came up and visited me a few weeks later, and I gave him a tour of the city, and at the end of the weekend, he said, I'm moving. I'm going to work tomorrow in L.A., and I'm going to give him my two-week notice. He says, I'll find something, but I have to live up here. And Gary went to his office and said to his boss, he said, I'm giving you my 2 weeks' notice. And the boss said, why? Where are you going? He says, well, I'm going to move to San Francisco. And the boss said, you know what? There's an opening in San Francisco at the same company. It just opened up. You can transfer. So within 2 weeks, he was up there living in San Francisco. So we became close friends. And he also went to lots of different churches with me, lots of different searching. And when I came home, I was so full of Baba, I said, I had Baba's picture up everywhere in my little apartment. And incense was burning all the time. And I missed the 60s, you know, I missed that whole period of life. So it was kind of I was living in the hate anyway. And I, you know, hung up my Indian things. I had a hippie pad is what I did. And so Gary would come over. And I would tell him Baba's, in fact, I should see what I've done to my friends. But anyway, I would tell them Baba's stories. And so one day, Gary calls me up. And he says, you'll never believe this. And I said, what? He says, last night I woke up in the middle of the night crying. And I said, why? He says, it was so weird. I had this dream. And I walked into this room, and he said, all of a sudden I looked, and it's, you know this Mayor Baba that you follow? I said, yes. He says, he's sitting in that room in a chair. And there's this pillow next to him, and he motions to me, come and sit down. And he says, I went and I sat down, and he looked at me, and he says, he put his hands on top of my head, and I was filled with such bliss in this dream, I woke up in my bed in a kneeling position. I said, wow. And so a few weeks later, he says to me, you know what he says? I think I'm going to go to India with you at Christmas time. And so he was the third one that came. There's other people, too.
What happened to David?
He came.
David came. Yes, David came and had a wonderful time here.
Yeah. Did Gary say when he came in here that this was the room he saw?
Yes, when he came in here, this was the room that he saw the chair and the pillow.
In his dream.
Yeah, which was an amazing thing.
So your cousin David became a born again Baba lover.
Yeah, he became a born again Baba lover. So it just kind of affects everybody, you know, just kind of. And now it's starting to happen in my family, of all things. My family's always respected me, because I was a very eccentric spiritual person, and, you know, when I became a charismatic Catholic, they all did. And when I decided to leave the Catholic Church, they all did. You know? Whatever Larry's done, they've all done. And so... I was in Phoenix recently, and my brother, who's underwent an excruciating divorce and is quite unhappy, He said to me, you know, he says, I want you to give me a book that explains the life of Meher Baba. And I said, why? And he said, well, he says, I don't know what you're into, but, you know, whatever your involvement is, and I see such changes in you, etc., I just want to read about it. And so even, you know, my family is starting to get interested in these things. I really believe Baba's going to have them all involved one day, because I have, it seems like I have very close spiritual karmic ties with my family. They were all very close together, you know, and have been spiritually. Is that enough, Eric?
Have you got tickets ready for them?
For them to come here?
Yes.
Yeah, I want to bring them here.
Yeah, but are there any more tickets there in your drawers?
No. Well, you know, this time coming, I did.
How many you had? You had three last time when you came.
Yeah, and this one is another one that I am. This is funny. I knew Baba wanted me to come back. I didn't know when. And I'm always looking for discounted rates for Baba lovers. And I've been successful in some cases. But Air Canada started service to Bombay. And so I called Air Canada and I said, I want you to have a salesman call on me because I want to discuss group rates, discounted rates, etc. And the guy came in and, you know, Air Canada is run by the government. And so they're really, they don't make any discounts, etc. So I talked to the guy and it was just the normal fare, which was very expensive, and he was unwilling to have any discounted fare. And I thought, well, you know, who are we with here? And so the next day, there's a message on my desk that this guy called, and I thought, I don't want to talk to him. He has no discounts for me. I'm busy. So I just crinkled it up and threw it away. And then again, this call from this guy, and I thought, what does he want? You know, wants to send me brochures or whatever. And I just kind of ignored it because I was very, very busy. And then he keeps calling and calling, and I thought, what does this man want? So finally I thought, okay, I'll call him. Oh, this is Larry from Travel Directors, and you called me, etc. And he says, oh, yes. He says, it was so nice talking to you the other day. And he says, you know, I went to my office and had a meeting with my supervisor. And I had pointed out to them that, you know, you've never experienced Air Canada. You've never flown on Air Canada. And so what I wanted you to know is that anytime you want to go to Bombay, just call me. I have a free ticket, positive space, so you can experience Air Canada. And I says, well, I'll go in July. He says, when? I says, July 19th. And then a couple weeks later, I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't go July 19th. Why am I assuming that that's when I should go? So I called them up and I said, you know, that free ticket I have, I'm going July 19th. And the secretary says, yes, I'm aware of that. I says, that's, you know, if I wanted to change that, is it possible? Because I didn't know whether Baba wanted me to be here at this time. And she says, well, she says, if I were you, I wouldn't change it because we may go on strike later on. And there may be some blackout periods and when you can travel. And I says, well, you think it's good to leave when I'm going? She says, oh, yes, definitely. Go in July. That answered that. So I'm here. And I got bit by the dog.
Call for the compensation. But I'm forced to come here.
No? Yes. So, Jai Baba.
Jai Baba. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.